It's time now for the KUMD Bear Grease Report.
Sponsored in part by Wolfsong Adventures in Mushing, Energy Plus of Duluth, and Wintergreen Northern Wear.
Joining us this morning is John Stetson, veteran musher and Bear Grease aficionado, winner, enthusiast for many years, and we're happy to have him as one of our trail reporters. Hey, John, good morning.
Good morning, Lisa. How you doing?
Well, I'm doing great, but I'm guessing that the sled dogs are not particularly happy with the warm conditions, and I'm guessing the mushers are worried about their dogs and they're not excited about the trail conditions. But again, they're further up north right now. Bring us up to speed, John. Where are they and who's doing what?
Well, they've left Devil's Track Lake, the Skyport Checkpoint, the leaders. Most of them have left, if not all, and they're headed towards Mineral Center, which is, I guess, maybe a 50-mile run, 45-mile run, something like that.
And who's chasing whom right now, according to your intel?
Well, it's the usual suspects. Ryan Reddington, of course, is out there, and that second Reddington team with Sarah Kiefer running it. They're keeping neck and neck, but certainly the other errands are after those two, with Erin Letzring. She's right up there, and Erin Altmus too. I'm really interested to see how this little last bit goes, because they've all been neck and neck. There's some, little bit of strategy differences with how much rest they're taking. I think Sarah Kiefer might be a little bit behind on rest at this point, and we'll see. Erin Altmus had a tremendous last run a couple years ago. Maybe the year before, I don't remember, but she had the fastest time in the last leg. So it's still a dog race, and we see Errol Wallen is he's quite an athlete himself, and he's doing quite well. He's probably the next one. Then of course Blake Frecking, and then we have the rest of the pack all chasing behind.
Right now, according to the radar or the GPS tracker, it shows Reddington and it shows Kiefer, I think. I can't get that. Right. Sarah Kiefer. And then Erin Letzring, then Erin Altmus, then Errol Wallen. At least they're numbered that way. I don't think these are bib. No, these aren't bib numbers. Okay, so then it's Errol Wallen and then Blake Frecking. Altmus, Frecking, and Wallen are all kind of clustered together, and Reddington, Letzring, and Kiefer are all kind of clustered together. So what are you hearing about the trail conditions further up north, John? I know Jason talked with us yesterday and said that trail, leaving Duluth was, I think he called it punchy.
Yeah, it's really soft and punchy. I mean, you can try it yourself. You just go walk out on the trail or anywhere, and you sink right in. And the dogs have a lot of trouble with that. You see the times of the runs are considerably slower than they have been in the last couple of years because of that. The dogs are traveling. On a run they might have done 11.5 miles an hour last year, they're running 10.3 or 10.1 this year. So it's considerably slower, and it's not any colder really up north either. It's still, mid-20s.
This is the Skyport to Mineral Center. So I have to back up one. I tell you, these sheets are amazing. But, yeah, we're looking at miles per hour here. All the fastest times are at 9.1 miles an hour. And then we get into folks running in the 8-plus miles per hour. So, yeah, the times are, and of course, the first leg when the dogs are excited and the mushers were trying to hold them back, we had times, in the 10 mile-an-hour range, but the novelty perhaps has worn off, and then, of course, it's the temperature for the dogs and the trail conditions. Are mushers, do you know if mushers are... The other thing Jason mentioned is he said, you know, when a dog takes a step on a trail like this that's so soft, he said, they slip. And he said, if it were me, he said, I'd be worried about sore wrists. And he said, you hate to head into, you know, hate to start the beginning of the race with dogs experiencing soreness. Are you hearing anything from mushers about being concerned about dogs just getting worn out, struggling against these trail conditions?
Well, not so much because, I mean, if you look at, I mean, they are down on dogs. I mean, they started with 10 dogs, and then they were, because of the low snow conditions, they were able to add 2 dogs to get back up to 12 at the first checkpoint. So now I think Jen Frecking is the only one, you know, up in the top with, and she has 11 dogs. Everybody else is down to, you know, 10 or 9. And that just happens, and that can be any kind of thing. You know, what you might lose with the punchy snow, you gain some, I guess, there's less risk going slow. And so when you're traveling in that snow, there's less risk. So if you have a really hard, fast trail, you have problems that way too. I mean, dogs can hurt shoulders and wrists. Anyway, any athlete in a competitive event, there is some risk of a sore muscle.
Well, as you know, as an athlete yourself, sore muscles happen, and part of that is the price you pay for enjoying the sport. But to start a race, you certainly don't want to start a race with, you know, dogs already starting to feel. What happens to a dog team when perhaps they do start a race and they have to really struggle? Do dogs get discouraged the way perhaps human athletes would, or do dogs have the same sort of mental toughness to just keep on going?
Well, that's a great question. Dogs are a lot like people in the respect that some, they have unique characteristics. So some dogs do get discouraged, other dogs don't. I mean, it's your leaders sort of set the tone for the whole team. And you have certain leaders, you know, that will break trail, like even in a 2-foot deep snow, they don't care at all. They just plow through it. Where other, you know, great leaders, that's just not their forte. And so you'll have to change out. So in this kind of conditions, if you have a strong dog team that's well-trained, it doesn't really make a whole lot of difference to the team. Some teams, maybe that don't have the kind of miles that they need, will falter. And also the dogs with long hair. I don't know exactly what happened with Peter McClellan. He's a great dog musher. He scratched at Sawbill. And he has pretty well-furred dogs. They come out of the James Nelson line of dogs, and they have fur. You know, she always liked fur. Peter likes fur on the dogs. Other dog mushers have breeds that the hair isn't as thick, and they can go better. And they just put a jacket on the dog if it gets real cold. Jen Frecking, she runs Siberians, you know, all pure Siberians. Those are, you know, double-coated, well-furred dogs. So you wouldn't look for her team to excel in these temperatures.
And yet she, as you pointed out, did leave Skyport with 11 dogs, and Blake left, and of course it's the same kennel, Blake left with 9. So
Blake left with 9. He's been running faster, and he also has mostly Alaskans in his team, Alaskan Huskies, as opposed to Siberians.
Really?
He has a few Siberians, but mostly Alaskans, yeah.
So even though they're a married couple, they're running, you know, in their kennel, they have different dogs, and they're running different dogs. They have different preferences in their teams.
Well.
Interesting.
Yes. Siberians are tremendous mostly beautiful and amazing sled dogs, and they go back to Leonard Sekula and, you know, came across the from Siberia, and they've come back as racing dogs. But these Alaskan Huskies that are, you know, you're just breeding for this real true attribute of racing. So they have a little bit of a genetic advantage when it comes to athleticism.
Well, whenever I guess...
Don't tell Jennifer I said that.
No, I guess every...
This is
Every time I think about Siberians, or I think about racing dogs, I think about everything I've heard about Siberians being stubborn and having minds of their own. And I think about, as Jason mentioned yesterday, Ann Stead, who raced the Rec Race, and her sled dogs that she trains. But in the off season for sled dog racing, she does agility. And I just always, you know, always... Aren't you going to just take one of your sled dogs, one of your Siberians, and try to train him for agility? Just one. And that would be a classic case, I think, of trying to train a dog to excel in something that they're kind of not hardwired for.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it's hard to get your shot putter at the track meet to run the mile, you know?
Right, right.
It's, you know, dogs have certain attributes and characteristics that make them better for one thing or another. You know, it was interesting to see I don't know if you talked about the 120 yesterday, the mid-distance race.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, but that was interesting. The usual suspects again up at top, the Showalter team winning it. But what was interesting to me is her overall speed was 10.8. which is just about 2 miles an hour slower than last year. You know, so that's interesting. Mike Bestian came in second, so which is, we've seen women dominate that race the last number of years. So Mike came back, got up in there. He had a really fast first run and hung on for second. So it was quite a great race.
There's been talk, I know that I have heard talk in the past. Of course, this year is such a weird year with COVID and the restrictions, and everybody's lives are so different. But I know I had heard talk in the past that more and more people were entering the mid-distance and fewer people were able to dedicate the time it takes to train a full marathon team, and that the field was shrinking in the full marathon. It seemed like a pretty robust slate of marathon runners this year. Have you heard anything more about that, John?
Well, let's be honest. The marathon is a mid-distance race now. It's not quite 300 miles. You know, back in the day when it was a marathon, it was 500 miles. They'd only be halfway right now instead of closing in on the finish.
Right.
So it's by reducing the mileage makes it more available to more dog mushers. By removing or by lessening the dog team down to 12 makes it more available for mushers. You have to have more dogs, obviously, to field a bigger team. And the better you are, the faster your dog team, the harder it is to find dogs that can make your team. So it's very hard to be competitive. I mean, you know, we can look at the Reddington Kennel. I mean, they have a couple hundred dogs. So,
but you've got to do that for a living. If that's what you're going to do, you have to do that for a living. You can't be like Jennifer and Blake, for example, who have other, air quotes, real jobs outside of.
Well, that's everybody basically everybody else in the race, in every race. You know, it's difficult to. You know, the most competitive dog mushers are the ones that are don't have any job in the winter except raising dogs.
Now, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, and ideally, if you can have a kennel of dogs that work in the summer, you know, so like, you know, Ryan's up on the glacier, you know, doing tours, or, you know, Jeff King of Iditarod fame, who has, you know, kennel tours that, that support his winter dog running.
Right. One of the things that was interesting when you talked about time to train was Colleen Wallen said that with the COVID pandemic, her son Arrow had a lot of time to train. And she said that's why she got, her words, kicked off the runners because he had had more time to train. So she got the puppy team and he got the more experienced team that he had been working with. Are you seeing or have you talked to mushers that said that due to the pandemic, maybe they did have a little bit more time at home to stay around? And I mean, other people have been, you know, adopting puppies during the pandemic. Are mushers just training like crazy?
Well, there was some of that talk. I mean, and not everybody. A lot of people, you know, it's pretty much the same thing. You still have to make a living, not particularly laid off, but there was more. I'm more time for some folks, but not all. I don't know how Errol Wallen has any time at all. I mean, he's like on every sports team. I mean, he's in high school, and but maybe the home.
Yeah, the working from home, I think, was able. It sounded like because of the pandemic and because he was at home. Well, you don't have to worry about, you know, taking a bus from here to there. And if your sports teams are maybe not practicing as much, you can spend all that extra time.
Well, sure. You just
out with the dogs.
Running dogs.
I think that's a fabulous idea. I would have done so much better in Phi Ed if it had somehow involved dogs. I would have been a success.
Indeed.
One of the racers, I don't remember which one, but one of the racers from Montana, I think it was from Montana, wanted a horse, and her folks said, no, but you can have a dog. So that's how she ended up getting involved in dog sledding, because the dogs came in second to the horse. Well, I could have a horse, but I couldn't have a dog. So, okay, fine. There you have it. But I never raced my dogs, never raced my horses. That's the way it is. Well, John, go ahead.
No, that's funny. Yeah, we used to have dogs and horses, and the horses would come and just stand in the dog yard trying to be part of the herd.
I love it. Horses are remarkable. And, of course, dogs, well, you know, who else are you going to count on to eat up the hoof trimmings when the farrier comes out if you don't have dogs?
Well, I'm on my way up to, in a few minutes here, I'm leaving to head up to Mineral Center to see what happens up there. It is quite different this year with COVID and things not being open and not being able to go in places. So I'm kind of keeping my distance. I'm not really talking to the people that it's hard because you have to keep some social distance.
Right, right.
I'm going to be up there. I'll try to get some photos, and we'll see what we see at Mineral Center.
Oh, that'll be excellent, John. And I can't wait till we check in with you this afternoon at 2. Are we still thinking that the race is going to finish? We're still thinking the race is going to finish today. Is that right?
Yes, we're still thinking that. They're going to get into they're going to get into Mineral Center at about, well, probably close to 9, I guess, 9 to 10. Then they have a 4-hour mandatory there.
Okay.
So,
but it looks like mid-afternoon or early afternoon anyway, we could be wrapping up the 37th running of the John Berger Sled Dog Marathon.
Yeah, so what they do is they go to Mineral Center, and in years past, they would leave Mineral Center and do a loop, because when they shortened the race, they had to add some loops when they stopped going up and then back.
Right.
They would add loops to add mileage. And so they added a loop out of Mineral Center. It's only about 9 miles to Grand Portage if you just go straight down the trail. But they don't do that. They do like a 30-mile loop And that loop ends up coming right back Mineral Center. And then in former years, it would go past Mineral Center and then the 9 miles down to Grand Portage. But this year, it's just Mineral Center back to Mineral Center for the last leg.
Well, it'll be, again, it'll be great to talk with you this afternoon at 2 and or at the race finish, whichever one happens first. You've got our number. Keep us in the loop, John. We want to be in that 30-mile loop, so keep us in the loop, and we'll talk with you a little later today, okay?
Okay, sounds good. Thanks, Lisa.
Thanks a million, John. John Stetson this morning, our race reporter, and he's on his way to Mineral Center, where he'll be talking to mushers as he can in a socially distanced kind of way, and he'll be there for the finish of the 37th running of the John Bear Grease Sled Dog Marathon.
Support for KMB's Bear Grease coverage is provided in part by Camp Chow, Wolfsong Adventures in Mushing, Energy Plus of Duluth, and Wintergreen Northern Ware. Additional funding provided by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.